from the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School. This is Work and Life on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Here is Professor Stu Friedman.
Welcome to Work and Life on SiriusXM's Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Yes, I'm your host, Stu Friedman. I'm an organizational psychologist here at the Wharton School. I'm the director of our Work-Life Integration Project. And what we do on this show, if you're just joining us for the first time, is explore everything related to work and the rest of life, your home or family, your community or society, and your private self, your mind, body, and spirit. What we're trying to do on this show is to bring you useful information that's going to be helpful to you in creating a greater sense of harmony among the different parts of your life, and hopefully to help others do the same. Coming up on today's show, I am thrilled to be joined by the former head of Google's K-12 education outreach, Jordan Lloyd Bookey, about how her company, Zubeen, is helping working parents with the enrichment needs of their children. Plus, a little later on, I'll be talking with Joshua Abram, an immensely successful serial entrepreneur who's devoting his energy now to growing Nui House, a home-like workspace that blends work and play in private co-working spaces for modern solopreneurs. So stay tuned to find out what a solopreneur is like, or what it is, and what their lives are like, and how people are designing spaces for that lifestyle. Our show every week comes to you live at this hour. It's Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time in West Philadelphia right now, and that's where we're broadcasting from. We love to hear from you. And there's lots of ways you can do that. One is to simply write an email to businessradio@siriusxm.com. You can also follow on Twitter at Stu Friedman. That's Stewfriedman. My handle. And our station's account, our channel, is Biz Radio 111. That's B-I-Z Radio 111. Well, let's get right into our conversation with our first guest, who is here in the studio, back on the Wharton campus, Jordan Lloyd Bookey, who hasn't been here in a while. She was my student back in the day, not that long ago.
No.
Jordan is the co-founder and chief mom, interesting title, at Zubeen, Zoobean. That's a service that provides help to families to discover apps and books their kids will love. And they just won $250,000 from Mark Cuban based on their Shark Tank appearance. For you Shark Tank fans out there, and I know you're listening, yes, they won $250,000 from Mark Cuban. And she is also, Jordan's also the former head of Google's K-12 education outreach and was just named one of Wharton's 40 Under 40. Jordan, welcome to the show and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
It's great to have you here in the studio. And for those of you who have a question, if you're listening and you want to call in, you want to find out about Zubeen or more generally about getting involved with your own startup and following your dream, which is what Jordan seems to have done so successfully while still managing a family at home, give us a call at 844-WHARTON. That's 844-942-7866. All right, so you're back, and you were just named one of Wharton's 40 Under 40. You're still quite young and already have had, I'd say, an unusual career for a Wharton grad. Now, as I have it, even back in college, you were interested in kids and education, and this was your passion after college. You taught for a couple of years, but so before we get into Zubeen, your family business, let's talk about, like, why did you come to Wharton in the first place?
When I came here, a lot of my friends and colleagues asked me the same question. So I didn't plan to go to business school. I think you speak to some kids. I have college students, mm-hmm. But I've mentored students over the years who say to me, well, I'm planning on going to business school. They sort of know that already, and they had their life's plan. I did not have that life's plan. Mm-hmm. So I went to teach, and I was very committed to education. I was then, after that, working in a literacy-focused nonprofit and also in Washington, D.C., and was passionate about that. And I love theater. So I had applied actually to this program for arts management at Columbia University in New York. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go. And I was speaking to one of my mentors, who's also a grad of Wharton. And he was the founder, co-founder of the school where I had taught in Washington. And he had been sort of a mentor, a friend to me. And when I told him where I was going, he said, well, but have you thought about business school? Because you're sort of pigeonholing yourself a bit into this one area. Are you positive this is what you want to do? I said, I think I do. I'm not 100% sure all this. And he said, well, why don't you just go look? I said, no. Business school is the dark side. You know, I can't do that.
The dark side.
Exactly.
The evil empire.
Exactly. But I came. He said, you know, just go look at some schools. So I went. Mm-hmm. I looked at a few different schools. I met with other people who were really like-minded. I found people who themselves had also come from an education background. And mm-hmm. now I see that there's a ton of social impact work here and at many other schools. But at Wharton, mm-hmm. I've really seen it explode.
It really has
exploded. At the time, it was kind of like on the cusp, you know?
When was that? When were you here?
I graduated 2007. So a lot of those things, we were active, but it was like the years after us where it really mm-hmm. blossomed. And at the time, though, when I came, I found people who were looking to change the world and, you know, do business and also do good and, you know, impact the world in other ways. And it was really inspiring to me. So I applied to many schools, but Wharton was just the one for me. So I came here, my path wasn't this way, but I had a series of different, you know, sort of interventions, you could say, that led me here.
Well, you were exploring what was of interest to you and getting input from people around you who helped you to see alternative paths that you could pursue in advance of that vision or that idea that was a spark inside of you.
That's exactly right. I think I had an idea of what I wanted to contribute to the world, and mm-hmm. I thought there was just sort of one path to that. And
through education?
Exactly, and sort of staying on that particular path. Mm-hmm. But coming here to Wharton really gave me a multitude of different ways, you know, that my career eventually followed, you know, to be able to have that type of contribution.
So you went from here to Google?
Exactly.
In 2007?
Yes. That's right.
And what happened there, and how did you end up, you know, coming back to the world of children and education?
Yeah. I've had a lot of great things happen by happenstance, I think, in my career. But the truth is, when I was at Wharton, I was completely committed. Even though I was here, I was thinking, well, me being here, that will be my, in quotes, private sector experience. I came to business school. Now I'm going back public sector. So I never even put my resume in the resume book. I mean, I was very committed. I had lined up jobs with a series of charter schools I had intended.
So the resume book, just for listeners.
Oh, sorry.
That's describe what that is.
See, I'm looking at a professor thinking
right.
Everybody knows.
I understand
knows.
What a
right.
resume book is.
This is the book that students, all who are at Wharton, are able to put their resumes into mm-hmm. one big book that recruiters can look through and gotcha. Sort of call you up if they're interested.
Right. So you absented yourself from
that's
that process.
That's right. I said, I don't need this. And once again, I had a series of mentors who said, do you think this is really a good idea? At least put your resume in the resume book. That's a very, you know, that's a simple thing to do. You never know. And I said, well, okay. And I did. A recruiter wrote me a one-line email that said, are you interested in coming to Google for the summer? And I wrote all my friends immediately, like, did you get the same email as I did? They said, no, this is not a spam. You know, this is real. Mm-hmm. So I wrote him back. I said, sure, you know, great. And I ended up having a series of interviews. And that year was the only intern in people operations, which is Googleese for HR.
No, we've had some folks from people operations on the show.
Exactly. And so that was before sort of the larger scale MBA program that they had. And I was the lone MBA, the lone intern in people operations that summer. So I was able to really see the organization. It was Google, I think at the time, had maybe 5,000 employees that mm-hmm. summer. So it was quite small and was there seeing a lot of the growth that was happening. It was really exciting. And I saw that there was some work happening that could like align with my values, albeit private sector. And I also felt like this was a company culture that I could be in and thrive in and be happy. And I really enjoyed that time and felt like I was sort of addressing all these different needs that I had and, you know, eventually ended up there.
So how did this lead to Zubin?
Well, so when I started at Google, I actually was not in education. I started with a project that was very operational in nature. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't happy. I don't often share this part of my Google experience, but I wasn't, I really was not aligned with us talking. Right. And a couple people listening. So I wasn't happy. I didn't like the particular projects I was on. And I would speak to my manager and she'd say, well, but why not? This is, you know, this is what I'm telling you to do. And I'd say, well, you know, I really am passionate about education. I'm very passionate about doing good in the world. And I don't want to build a database for whatever it was. And she's like, well, but this is the job. And, you know, you came on here without really knowing what it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And we would go back and forth. And eventually I found diversity programs. And this was personally very important to me. I'm white and I'm married to an African-American man. Mm-hmm. And I feel very passionate about the intercultural, interfaith life that we have built together. And we were building at that time. And I thought, now this is something I can really build. I see a need for it at the company.
Because it was personally meaningful to you and was going to meet a demand inside the company and beyond.
Exactly. I mean, if you follow Google and what they've been releasing around their data, I mean, this has been years in the making of, you know, really trying to make it transparent what's happening. So I took on that role in diversity. And then eventually when it came time to build out a business plan for diversity, I worked with my director at the time, and we carved in a little piece of that business plan for the, you know, executive council that approves it and all this. And I said, let's build in a piece around K-12, because clearly if we're focusing on recruiting a long-term pipeline, you're not going to start in college. It's too late. And we built in this component, and they said, well, why don't you lead that component? I said, okay. And then I got pregnant, and I was on maternity leave very soon after that. And when I came back, they said, well, actually, we decided to make that a whole separate team now. You can lead that team. We've built it out. We've kind of been waiting for you to come back, and here you go. And it was rolled out as a separate initiative. So that's what led me to be able to really focus on expanding access to technology and computer science and being able to actually do outreach work and work about which I'm completely passionate in the context of Google, which was a wonderful experience for me.
So that's Zubin. So that's important context, because there you got the experience, again, following your passion, the thing that you were really interested in, putting that out there as something that might be of value to the business,
right,
and getting support for it, because it was something that was going to meet a need, but really grew out of something that was very important to you. And I think that's the point I want to underscore here. And why I've invited you on the show, because you've been able to pursue a passion and build a business around it. So tell us more about how you started Zubin and what you've been doing.
Sure.
What is Zubin?
So as you said, Zubin is a service that helps families find books and apps that their kids will love, that will work for their individual children. And we, in particular right now, are working with libraries, public libraries, with our service called Beanstack. And we, in essence...
Beanstack.
No L.
No L.
Okay. And what we are doing is working with public libraries, working with their expert librarians to recommend books that are, or have books that are recommended by your librarian at your system, wherever you might be, that are sent to you along with learning tips and books that are personalized. So no two kids will have the exact same set of recommendations. You build a profile with age and reading level and interests that really work for your child. And we're helping public libraries really market themselves and their staff experts, and then also helping to expand their early literacy and early childhood development efforts.
So do you work with the parents to get those interests and, you know, what the kids are wanting to read, what their passions are for the stories that they want to hear, or is that something that you get from the schools, or both?
So we focus mostly on ages 0 to 8, although we have been expanding with some of our library partners up to age 12. But generally we focus on 0 to 8, which means that we are emphasizing parent engagement. So it's really a family engagement tool for libraries. And what parents do are you would come onto this.
The libraries, if I could just jump in here, must be very interested in that, because that's part of what is a challenge, I'm sure, for many librarians, is how do you connect with the kids' larger life beyond, you know, they're being forced to attend library.
Exactly. And I think, there are some families who go into the library frequently. They're there for story time. They're the sort of heavy users, you know. But then you have many other families, or what they might call a non-patron, who don't even know all the amazing, wonderful things available to them at the library. And what we try to do is connect those dots for families. So a parent would go on and say, if my child is Cassius, I go and tell you a little bit about his reading level, his age, some of his interests, favorite genres, and sort of build that profile. You can always edit it. But then that way, the recommendations that are coming from those librarians are personalized to his sort of specific needs.
If you're just joining, I'm speaking with Zubeen's Jordan Lloyd Bookie. We're talking about her company, which helps families discover apps and books their kids will love and engages families in the learning process at the library and elsewhere. So when did you start and how do you account for your success so far?
So we started, it was a little bit of a slow roll. I was at the time pregnant or expecting with my second, and we were personally experiencing the problem of finding for our own family of finding books that that sort of look like our family in the context of speaking to our child about having a little sister. So many times I like to, they say picture books are like windows to the world and also should be like a mirror, a reflection of yourself. You should be able to do both. And we had no problem finding, windows into the broader world. But when it came to finding a mirror for our family, interracial family, we just couldn't find that book that would really resonate with us. And, fast forward many months later, mm-hmm. we did randomly, a librarian friend actually sent us this book, not at our, request, but it was perfect for our family. And we had that moment of, wow, this is something that could really resonate. This is our particular situation, mm-hmm. but there are so many other situations in which you really want to be able to provide that experience to families. So we had that moment and started building. My husband, Felix, is a serial entrepreneur now, I guess. He just had a couple of other businesses and one in particular before this. So he was already of the mindset of, we just have to keep coming up with ideas. Let's come up with ideas and they might end up scrapped. And so we own many domain names, all around that are under. We are always coming up on Yahoo, mm-hmm. They're always coming up for renewal and reminding me of the many ideas that we had. But this one really stuck, and I think because it resonated, to your point, with us very personally. It wasn't a need that we identified in the market as much as we identified it at home and then extrapolated into the market. So it really was something that took hold for us, and we were able to build because we were not only building for other families, we were building for ourselves as well. And so, you're your first user, right? So that's really how the idea was formed. But it was we had many months of sort of building it and not necessarily thinking that I would leave my job to go and do it. But eventually, once we had done some fundraising and raised an initial round of capital, it was possible for me to leave. But we sort of kept it going for a long time with me working full time at Google and, my extra 20 whatever percent I had left over working on Zubeen. So that's really how we sort of went there. It wasn't like one day we decided and bam, that was it. It was a slow roll off for both of us from our previous jobs.
And it launched when?
And it launched in May 2013.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. So still pretty young.
We're very young.
you call yourself Chief Mom.
I do.
And Felix is Chief Dad.
Yes.
Those are interesting titles for a business. a lovely way, I suppose, to integrate the different domains of your life. What do those titles really mean, though? What do they signify to the people who work with you, to your clients, your customers, other stakeholders?
It's funny because initially, when we were thinking about what we would call ourselves, because we were co-founders and husband and wife, and we thought, so you're going to be the CEO, but then am I going to, we're both doing everything at the beginning, right? And
right.
We just didn't want to delineate in that way to start.
You mean
and
hierarchically?
Now, right. And now we have, and it's fine. We worked through much of that. But at the time, that was sort of the idea of having something that was more playful that we referred to ourselves as.
Mm-hmm.
But then, within, a few weeks, I had so many friends, you wouldn't believe it, who said to me, I love that. I love it so much because it's really showing that, this is a part of your life that you put forth first. You're really integrating these pieces mm-hmm. together. And I love what that says about your company and your mission. And
what does it say?
I think it says that this is who I am, that I'm bringing, my full self to this job. And that means sometimes, I am obviously professional in all situations, but
oh, of course.
There are times when you know, I really, really am chief mom. And I really do have to leave on Friday because they suddenly don't have school or my daughter was called home. And it's like accepting that and saying, you know, there are many, many difficult things. There are many challenges to being an entrepreneur, to having a family business. I mean, you name it. But one of those is not, you know, having to forego your family all the time, because you do get to decide. And I think that we're putting that out front and saying this is what matters first. And this is really at the core of our business, and that this is for us as much as it is for our customers.
Have you gotten any pushback? Like, hey, if you're a mom, how are you going to deliver these products on time?
We've definitely received, no, not that. I think that Wharton has helped with that, really, to be honest. People perceive Wharton to be so,
Wharton
analytical
pedigree
exactly
helps to counteract that sort of effect.
Exactly. But in general, you'll hear this from, I think, many, there aren't so many, but from couples that are entrepreneurs together.
Yeah.
Don't go in and pitch together. You know, don't try to raise money together. Don't be in the room, right? Don't remind people that this is the situation, that like you're married and this is
because it'll be perceived as a distraction.
What if they fight? What if they get divorced? Mm-hmm. What if, you know, and this is going to, it's too complicated. Don't remind people that you're married. You know, don't remind them sort of this part of your life. So
because it would be another layer of complexity that might get in the way of your business.
Exactly.
Did you heed that advice or not?
We've heeded that advice in some ways, because that's what people, you know, suggested to us. Although it's funny because oftentimes Felix is, you know, does the lion's share, if not all of the fundraising. But sometimes when I and, you know, meet some of the other investors, they're like, oh, you know, we should have been able to meet Jordan earlier on, you know, and it's, you know, you sort of never know what it's, because it's not a blanket statement that'll work overall. But I think we wanted to play it safe. So, yeah, we did that. And also because there's just limited amount of time in the day in our, you know, level of what you can both take on, you have to start dividing. So so a little bit of both.
So what's the biggest challenge that you find in working with your spouse?
I'd say the biggest challenge of working together is carving out the space, you know, to use your framework, probably carving out space for self, because so much is together. So your work is together, your family is together. I forget the fourth tenet.
Well, there's no community,
community,
society.
And community. And that, I think that is probably the hardest thing for us to, besides, you know, the actual work we're doing is the hardest piece.
Because, well, that's it.
Yeah. But it's the self, I think, that you have to really make that space to find time for you and to nurture that part of yourself. It can be very difficult because suddenly many and every different part of your life is intertwined. So you don't really have that space, like your workspace for many people is just, that's also separate from family, right? Those are very separate, but for us, work and family are sort of like circles on top of each other.
Of course. Yeah. So what have you found has worked for you in finding time, that precious time to restore and rejuvenate and tap into the things that give you, you know, sustenance?
Yeah, well, you know, first is that, you know, in terms of how we manage the challenge, I mean, we haven't separate office space that's not in our home.
Okay.
We separate.
But how does that help you personally?
Yeah. So me personally, well, what we've done initially, it was complete. If you'd asked me this a year ago, I would have said, I don't know. You shouldn't have me on this radio show. But now we have found ways, implementing, like you call them, I think, experiments. So we've started implementing things like working out. So that's really important to me, to be able to do yoga, to work out. So we aim for, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. And my husband wakes up. We both wake up at ungodly hours. I'm doing work and he's at the gym. He comes home, drop the kids off. Then at night when he's helping with doing bedtime routine, I go to the gym or go to yoga. And so it helps to be able to have those separate spaces. We've also just started saying, you know, it's fine. You can go, you know, be with your friends this night, or to make sure that we have, you know, date nights, and just to have times that are separate, and especially date nights that aren't necessarily always just with the two of us. you know, sure. but with other people in the community and other people that we're able to really connect with because we do spend so much time together. So it's nice to be able to, we have to really force those things because otherwise, you know, we honestly, there's no end to the work. We could probably just be home on Saturday, every Saturday night, you know, working and doing laundry and other really, you know, unexciting
the exciting, wonderful aspects of the entrepreneurial life.
Right.
Well, so let's stay on the subject of the boundaries, because I think that's such a crucial issue, especially in a family business, especially with a couple.
Yeah.
So you find that you can maintain those boundaries by making commitments to being very explicit about, you know, the needs that you've got separately and together as a couple and together as a company. I mean, what's the key to making that happen? What advice would you give listeners about how to make that happen, people who are in a similar situation, perhaps?
Yeah, you know, I think one piece is just being really honest with yourself and not trying to accommodate what you think the other person really wants. That gets very muddled. See, in a husband-wife relationship or husband-husband-wife, part in a partnership relationship, you have to think oftentimes about what is this person, what do they really want, and by saying this, do they really want that? And, you know, you can have a very honest, open conversation, but in a work relationship, you need to be extremely, you know, direct, and it's a different relationship, right? And you can't take things personally. If somebody doesn't like something you've done, mm-hmm. doesn't agree with it, it's nothing personal. It's hard to separate those and to get that, to remove those two things from each other. So for example, you know, I was working, you know, early in the morning to late at night. I was staying up till probably, you know, 2 a.m. every night. And part of the reason was there is an, you know, limitless amount of work to do. And part of the reason was I was thinking, I think this is probably also what Felix wants. We're both so dedicated to the business, but there's so much to do. And I think he'll maybe, you know, are we going to...
Sounds like you were making assumptions about what his real needs and expectations were.
Exactly. And I also wasn't thinking about what my needs and expectations were. For me, it was so important. One of my, you know, most important pieces and the reason why I also wanted to start this business was to be able to spend more time with my kids and have that flexibility, right? And so we talked about it and said, you know what, it actually is important for me to have those few hours a day. That's very important. I get scared about, you know, later in life thinking back going, oh God, I missed that chance, you know? And so we had to say, well, that's fine. How are we going to manage that? What's that going to look like for us? And it's just so important to have those conversations and to express when you're unhappy with something in your personal space and separate that out from what's happening work-wise. When it's happening with work, just keep it work. When it's happening personal, try to keep them separate and not like one is always going to impact the other. It's very hard to do.
Do you have like ways of doing that you've developed that you signal, like you hold up a red card and say,
no.
Okay, this is work, a green card, this is home? How do you make that distinction?
We usually will say if it's personal and it's a some type of conflict or something you want to talk about, we wait for what we call a neutral space.
Ah.
And so that means that...
You have a term for that.
Yeah, we have a term, neutral space. It's our neutral space. And we'll always, usually it'll start with, well, since we're in a neutral space, I would like to revisit XYZ that happened earlier today, or I want to revisit this conversation we had or whatever. And those are pretty much always personal. Mm-hmm. When it's work, we have conversations in the moment because it's just, it's work. And you shouldn't let it be so, impact you on a personal level. So it does. I mean, it does. But we do try to, because it's not just the two of us. We have other members of the team. And, you know, we want to be able to operate, you know, in a way that doesn't, you know, stop other people or, you know. But when it comes to personal and having those conversations, it can be hard conversations. That's what we do. We've also, you know, we make time for things that matter to us personally, you know, when we're thinking about, anything from, you know, raising our kids to whatever those topics are, we make sure that we have those separately.
Last question. We've only got 30 seconds here. How would you like to describe what it is that you see in the future for Zubin and for the chief mom and dad of Zubin?
I would love to see us serving, many millions of families across the United States and to be able to work with every single library system, and ultimately even internationally. We think we have a great platform that can really engage families, for especially for those early childhood families who have younger kids.
Fantastic. I've been speaking with Zubeen co-founder Jordan Lloyd Bookey. Jordan, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh my gosh, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
For more information about Jordan and Zubeen, you must check out her website, which is beanstack.org. That's BEANSTACK.org. And follow Zubeen on Twitter at Zubeen for Kids. That's ZOOBEAN for kids. FORKIDS. Just ahead, the phenomenally successful entrepreneur Joshua Abram is going to join me to talk about his latest project, which is Nui House, a home-like workspace that blends work and play for modern solopreneurs. I'm Stu Friedman, and you're listening to Work and Life on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School, Sirius XM 111.